line with this year's International Women's Day theme of inspiring change, we wanted to take the opportunity to bring alumni from our Women in Leadership program into a conversation reflecting on their learnings from the program, how they've implemented these to become better leaders in their institutions, and ways this has inspired positive change among their colleagues and clients. During the second half of the discussion, we will bring the perspective of how an institution itself must find ways to create an environment that supports and fosters women leaders and share how a gender-diverse institution benefits the bottom line. So on to our alumni. I'd like to introduce you to our three panelists with us today. We have Ruth Mutebe. She's the head of internal audit at Finance Trust Uganda. Ruth is a certified public accountant and holds a bachelor's degree in business administration from Makerere University. She's also a certified trainer. Ruth has over 10 years of auditing, accounting, and training experience, and she's currently a member of the Institute of Certified Public Accountants of Uganda and the Institute of Internal Auditors. She considers audit to be a strategic ally towards the achievement of corporate strategy. We also have with us Janet Abzak. Janet has 14 years of practical experience in management, HR, and administration. She holds a master's degree in business administration and a Bachelor of Art in English Literature. Ms. Abzak is a good communicator and an effective team leader who adheres to the highest professional standards and work ethic. She's acknowledged by senior management in her organization as a problem solver and a motivational leader. She established and currently manages the Vitas Jordan Human Resources Department. And finally, we have Huda Saeed. She's the finance manager at Al Majmua, the Lebanese Association for Development. In this role, she manages all aspects of the accounting and finance department. She oversees all financial reporting for internal and external stakeholders and ensures increased transparency through better financial reporting to the board of directors, funders, and the public. Previously, Huda served as senior economic officer in the economic unit of the United Nations Development Program and a senior consultant for strategy and operations at Deloitte Consulting. She's a chartered financial analyst and holds a Master's of International Affairs from Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs, as well as an MBA from American University. All three of our panelists today are graduates of our Women in Leadership program. This is a signature program of Women's World Banking that aims to enhance the leadership capacity of women in microfinance institutions. The five-day leadership development program and provides opportunities for women to analyze their leadership style and build a personal development plan. They are also graduates of our coaching program and have participated in a specialized women's leadership exchange. You can visit our website to learn more about our leadership development offerings by visiting www.womensworldbanking.org. All three of these women are also an inspiration to me personally, so it's very appropriate that they're here to talk about how to be an inspiring women leader today. So I'd like to start the conversation with a question about what our panelists took away from attending the Women in Leadership program. I'd like to start with you, Huda. Could you share with us what were two or three lessons that you took home from the program and how you went about implementing these in your institution?
Of course. I think one of the main things I took away is that leadership is something, a skill that you can really improve on and improve through practicing certain things. You know, it's not that you are born with it, some people probably are, but it is a skill that you learn and you can practice and improve on. And one should not forget that. And the more you work on it, the better you are. I think this is one of the really important things I learned. The other one is that if you want to lead people, you need to really understand also what they want. So two things we focused on and I think were very helpful were active listening to people, really taking the time to listen to those you work with, understanding their needs, and getting feedback from them also. The two both take time and effort, but I think when we're rushing around, we don't do them as often as we would like. So I think that was essential, really, listening to people, what do they need, Otherwise, I don't think you can motivate them or get them to be committed to what you want them to do as well. The third thing that I think was very helpful as well is that taking the time to think of what you want to achieve, really, because you know we don't think how we spend our time. We always end up like just spending our time running around from one thing to another, and taking the time, especially I did learn this a lot with one of the coaches, is really taking the time to think on a weekly basis at least, what are the things that you want to work on instead of just working on the immediate and urgent things and putting out fires. So taking that time, I think, is essential.
Thank you, Huda. I think that's such a great point that leadership is really a practice. And though some people may be born with innate leadership skills, leadership is something we can all develop through reflection, through working on our skills. Thank you. How about you, Ruth? What were two or three lessons that you took away from the program?
The program was an enriching experience for me. And one of the great lessons that I took from the program is that as individuals, we have differing personality states and preferences. The MBTI model opened my eyes a lot. As individuals and as leaders, as we relate with different people, people behave differently because of what they prefer. When you go into the differences in energy, in decision, in lifestyle, and all that. Now, that opened my eyes a lot because it helped me to understand why other people behave and think and react the way they do. The fact that somebody behaves or reacts differently from the way I do does not mean that that person has a problem. It just shows that that is who they are. And if you have a better understanding of that, then it makes relationships quite easy. It has helped me manage relationships with my stakeholders, with my team, with the board, with senior management. And that is an important behavioral aspect that we have to note as leaders. And it also opened my eyes to believe that doing a good job is not only about the technical competence. It's also about the behavioral aspect. Now, if you have the Myers-Briggs type indicator, it brings out the behavioral aspect. Now, when you put that together with the technical competence that a leader has, then it gives you the totality of the person that you're dealing with. And if you can understand everybody in your team and everybody that you work with that way, then it becomes, it makes relationship management quite easy. The second thing that I learned was about the leadership style. We have different approaches to leadership style. But I like the participative or the collaborative leadership style. And I took it back with me to my company. And what it taught me over time is that being a leader does not necessarily mean that you know everything. And it does not mean that whichever thing comes around your way, you have a total solution to it. We are only privileged to be leaders of teams that have great potential. And it is an opportunity for us to unlock to get the best out of the team. Now, during my coaching program, we had that as one of the things to implement in my department. And one way that I have used this is through delegation. So I had a number of assignments that I delegated to my team. And surprisingly, the results that came through were not any different from what I would do. Now, that gave me an opportunity to look at what my team members have done from a strategic perspective. And at the same time, it gives me an opportunity to develop the people that I work with. It is amazing. My staff that I work with have prepared things from strategy to board papers to name anything. So it gave me a learning that as long as you believe in somebody, give them the space to think and innovate, they will always do a very, very good job. The third learning that I took away from the program is, however complex a dream may be, if you are committed, you'll always get it. When I joined the program, I had business objectives, personal objectives, and it is in that program that I was able to develop my vision. Now, at that point in time, way back in July 2011, the dream seemed something very far away from me. But with commitment, determination, support of the network members, my coach, it has now become a reality. So with commitment, anything is possible. I can give an example of what we committed to do with Janet right here on the panel. Each of us had challenges getting to office at the beginning of the day. And we say, okay, if that is the challenge, let's make a deal. Each of us gets to office at 7:30, and whoever gets there first sends a chat message to the other. And interesting, we made it. And as I speak today, I'm one of those people that get to office very early. And everybody was wondering, what is the trick? But it is about commitment and support from other people.
Thank you, Ruth. Great examples of your learnings and how they've really made a business difference for your team and for your organization. I love the commitment and support that you and Janet gave each other as well, from Uganda to Jordan, to prove that your network can be global and still be very supportive. Janet, I'd love to hear from you about your learning as well.
I didn't have a lot to add to my friends and colleagues here. There are a few things that I have practiced before, but it got deeper with the trainings we had, like active listening, taking different perspectives of the same issue. It was easier at least to explain to others why we have different perspectives or how to do this, based on, for example, the Meyer Briggs. Before explaining different personalities exist, was a problem because I couldn't get through to the people I was talking to, like other managers. But with the Myers-Briggs and with the lessons we took back from the leadership program, it was easier at least to articulate how you can do this. Work-life balance was something that was really important because before I used to work all day at the office and never leave. I then made this pact with Ruth. And we actually had a bit, and now I owe her dinner. But that really helped me work on my work-life balance, because Ruth told me a few facts about how her day became better and how her life became better after she started practicing. So it was easier for me to follow her lead, let's say. We learned how to celebrate our achievements. We learned how we can be situational leaders, and that does not really affect who you are. It just depends on, sometimes you have to be, most of the time actually, collaborative, but sometimes you have to take other roles, and that's not something that is wrong. It's just the way, it depends on the situation. And the mere fact that the trainings helped us understand these settings made it easier for us to go through them and practice them more. So that's basically, I learned, like you ladies, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you to all of you. When we learn about leaders, it's really helpful to hear all of these success stories, how you put your leadership skills into practice. It's also very interesting to hear about any challenges that you may have faced in implementing your strategic visions and the skills that you've used to overcome those challenges. Is there anything that you can share after coming home from the program, any challenges that you face, and the skills and strategies that you use to overcome them?
I think the biggest challenge is actually keeping the focus on and remembering the lessons that we learned, because things do come up all the time that distract you. I mean, like day-to-day stuff. Whether it's just taking care of emails or like a problem here, a problem there, that you actually sometimes just find that the day has passed by without, you know, without really being deliberate about what you want to do. And And I think if you let it sometimes just passes by without like just because you're trying to like put down a buyer or just trying to catch up on stuff, that you you really don't practice as much what you would like to do, the skills that you learn. So I can just taking the time, whether it's always slowing down to try to do some of the things that we talked about and to keep reminding ourselves to keep on practicing them. I think that is one of the harder challenges. Like the network helps a lot in that because it keeps on reminding you, and like, you know, and every time that we have a call with the rest of the network or we get even an email or like when there's an occasion and people send each other emails, it just reminds you of the spirit of it and it like puts you back on track a little bit. And you're like, yes, you know what, you know, I shouldn't be rushing around doing these things that are just urgent and just try to focus a bit more on terms of things that are important actually.
Great. It goes back to the point you made about reflection, how important it is to find those moments to just reflect back on what you're trying to achieve. Great. Janet, let's hear from you. Any challenges that you face?
like what you said, sometimes the daily pressure of work you have to do, or maybe you can think outside of this, there is time constraints, but the hardest one was breaking the habit. As I said, I had the growth to break the habit of waking up too late. It's the hardest part, actually, because you're learning something new. What makes it easier is having people who support you. And another thing that was helpful is the way you, WWD follows up on these matters. Like, you're always in connection, so it's a constant reminder that you're committed to something that you want to do. So just don't get lost in the meandering ways of the world. So that was really good for us.
Thank you. And Ruth, any challenges that you've faced and how you've overcome those challenges?
Yes, there were a number of challenges that I faced. When I was implementing the participative leadership approach, it requires a bit of patience because here you are as a leader, you know what you're supposed to do, but you have delegated an assignment to it and develop this time. And the speed at which you complete an assignment is not the same like a team member will. So sometimes you get the temptation of recalling the assignment and you do it yourself. But when you look at the total benefit that will come out of that, you develop the team, you also have some time to reflect on what has been done and you put in your contribution from a strategic level rather than doing it yourself. If you have been part and parcel of an assignment, you don't look at it the same way as it is when somebody else does it and they bring you the results. So that and the support of my coach, Mary Pennington, gave me the patience. So I tried it once, twice, thrice, and it's okay now. I can always work with another person as long as we have interactions. How far have you gone? Where are the challenges? What can we do at this stage? It gave me a lesson of being patient with others, because when everybody's growing, they need some time to learn what they're doing. You cannot be good at what you're doing the very first time. Then the second challenge that I had, similar to what Buddha had, is coming back from the group room, you have a lot of innovations that you want to implement, and all of them are really, really good, but you can't do everything at the same time. And at the same time, the operational things that you have to do on a day-to-day basis. Now, those are very urgent, much as they may not be very strategic. So balancing between strategic implementation and responding to the day-to-day duties as a leader was a challenge. How I managed to go through that was to make very good use of my diary and know what are those things that I must do today. And I try to do them first thing in the morning, or if I have delegated that aspect, then I'll follow through at particular times during the day as I take out things that are quite urgent.
Well, Right, as leaders, we have to decide what to do and do those things, and we have to decide what not to do and not do those things, whether we delegated them to someone else. Jana and Huda, I know you've both also taken on the challenge or the opportunity of empowering your team members a little bit. Ruth was talking about delegation. Could you both share your experience in that regard in terms of empowering others?
Sure. One of the things I wanted to really work on was having someone in the team to be a backup, or like even to prepare them in case they can become the finance manager. And I think having that in mind, some of the skills that I learned, I liked working on to transfer to a person in the team. So what we've been working on since I came back from the Southern trainings we did with Women Not Banking was actually really spending time with that person a little bit more on a regular basis, and that has been very helpful to be able to transfer that. And as Ruth was saying, I think one of the harder things is to let go of some stuff, because I think, I don't know, maybe we're all a bit control freaks, but like really in letting go and letting other people do the stuff, despite the fact that it might take them some time, longer than it takes you, or you are concerned, you know, but unless you do that, it's first, I don't think you can do what you would like to do, and second, you want that others develop. So I appreciate Russell's example in terms of really letting go and giving a chance for others to do some of the stuff.
Yeah.
I totally agree with Huda. Like for me, I didn't have a problem with setting goals things, but I have a problem with committing the time to teach people how to do them. It takes patience, and it takes a lot of active listening, because once you listen, you're actually empowering, and when you allow people to talk how they want to implement a certain thing in their own way, it takes time and it takes patience not to interfere, right? Don't do it my way. So this is not the easiest part to say, but it gets easier once you see them empowered and up with new ideas that you would not have thought of even before. One of my little success stories is a lady who joined my team. She was very shy and she was very self-conscious at the beginning, and now I see her counseling everybody, which is really great. She's like a great success now. And another thing is that I know that they're empowered and they're capable of taking care of things, because I've been sometimes away from the office for a whole week or 2 weeks, and I didn't really have to worry about it at all. While my other, let's say, manager colleagues, they're on call 24/7 because they have to take care of certain issues. So I'm really glad that we figured a way out to bring some dedication and empowerment for our staff, and I'm really proud of them.
Thank you. Before we wrap up this segment of the conversation, I'd like to just go around and ask each of you to share one thing that you feel has really been instrumental to your success as a leader. I'll start with you, Ruth.
Thank you, Sarah. What has been instrumental to my success is the commitment to the self-realization that I put from. The MBTI is very fundamental to me because it helped me realize who I am. And it was the basis for making my vision and several other things. Because for me as a leader, my passion and the purpose for my living is to support others realize their independence, be it psychological, financial, and if I can use my leadership ability and technical ability to make somebody's dream become a reality, then that makes me happy. So commitment to that was very, very fundamental. I cannot underestimate the support from the network, WWB, network, the people we're with on the program. Sometimes if you're in the middle of a number of things that you're trying to implement and you see an email from a woman leader, it inspires you and you're like, oh, okay, I think I can still go on because there are a number of other people who are also chasing the same thoughts like I do. The support from my coach and supervisor was very, very fundamental. My coach, Mary Pennington, believed in me. And every other time we spoke, she was like, Ruth, you can do this, and I know you have all the potential to do this. And she was always proud of me, and that made me go on. It gave me energy every other time. I was looking forward to discussions with her. And whenever I shared with her what I had done, she was happy for me, and I know she wished me well. So that is what gave me the energy. Special thanks to Janet. We spoke almost on a daily basis. Every morning we were talking somewhere in the afternoon. She was quite an inspiration. The WWB team, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Ruth. And Janet, what is one thing that's been instrumental for your success?
Well, I have all of the things that was mentioned. I would add family and friends, and institutional support is important.
Thank you. And we'll be speaking about that a little bit more in a few minutes. Huda, how about you?
I agree with Ruth and Janet. I think the institutional support is very important because you. I think it's very important to be in an environment where they actually encourage you to grow and to become a better person and to become a better manager, become a better leader. I think that's very important. And one of the programs with Women in Banking, we encourage to have more than one person in an institution attend the trainings. And I find that very helpful because some of the things, then the two people or three who ever attended can remind each other. And also it creates a culture that is it's more prevalent in the institution. So I think institutional support is really needed. Important and the support of the network as well is really is a reminder of the things that we can do and the things that we can improve on. So it's very helpful.
Thank you to all of you. It's very inspiring to hear about your successes and all of the skills that you've put into practice to overcome the challenges that we all face and all leaders face on a daily basis. Just to summarize a few points that I'm taking away from this conversation, we said that leadership is a practice. It's a skill that can be refined and improved. The importance of reflection. How do we spend our time as leaders? Are we spending time putting out fires, or are we focused on the real important strategic initiatives that we're tasked with accomplishing? We talked a lot about people. As a leader, it's important to know ourselves and to know our people, to empower them. Sometimes we have to let go and give the people around us a chance to make their best contribution, and that ultimately will help us as leaders to succeed. We talked about listening and the importance of work-life balance, of finding the time to give our best contribution at work and in our personal lives. So I'll be taking all of those away with me from the conversation today. Thank you. So now I'd like to shift the conversation a bit to focus on what institutions need to do to support women leaders like Huda, Janet, and Ruth. At Women's World Banking, we believe that a key component towards a woman leader's success is her institution's commitment to supporting her to diversity. You all three have spoken about the importance that your institution supportive you played in your personal leadership development. Like any strategic business initiative, if we want to achieve gender diversity, an organization's senior leadership needs a well-articulated vision for achieving diversity. They need clear targets that are tied to business outcomes, as well as mechanisms to measure progress. Achieving diversity also requires a shift in mentalities and changes in the organizational culture or the unspoken rules about how things are done here. For this to happen, you need senior leaders to set the tone and convey the right messages about diversity. And you also need strong managers to implement new policies effectively. I would love to open this conversation to our panelists, but before we do that, we are going to have a few poll questions for our audience about gender diversity in institutions. So the poll should be coming up on your screens in just a second. Okay. And we have a very savvy audience today. The answer was, in fact, 35%, so congratulations to everyone for being up on the statistics. We know at Women's World Banking, when we talk about the business case for gender diversity, that having diversity is no longer just a nice to have, it's really a must for strong financial performance as well as social performance. So moving on to our second poll question, which of the following do you think is the most important thing an institution can do to improve gender diversity among its staff and leadership? A, mentorship and sponsorship programs. B, flexible work policies. C, the elimination of bias in hiring and promotion decisions. D, providing gender sensitivity training to managers, both men and women. And E, creating talent development programs for high potential women. Thing. We do seem to have some votes on all fronts, which is why I mentioned this was somewhat of a trick question. All of these aspects could be very important in improving gender diversity among staff and leadership. Of course, the majority of our audience has said that eliminating bias in hiring and promotion. Important to understand your people, and all of our panelists today spoke about the importance of self-knowledge and knowing their staff. So it's important to understand in your particular context, institutional context or cultural context, which of these types of interventions might be the most impactful in terms of improving gender diversity. Okay, we're back. So I'd like to ask our panelists, given their experience as women leaders in the financial services industry, which we know has typically been male-dominated, to share their perspective on what institutions can do to promote gender diversity. So I'll start with you, Ruth. I know that at Finance Trust Uganda, you have, I believe, 60% of your staff are women. So I'm wondering what, in addition to impressive numbers like this, what are other indicators that an institutional environment is fostering its women talent?
Before I go into what Finance Trust has done, to me, I believe that gender diversity is a natural thing. For those of us who are Christians, who if you have a religious background, there is a belief that a woman was created as a helpmeet for a man. It may be contested here or there, but that makes it a natural thing. That means in society, you need to have women and men. If you have it elsewhere and you also bring it to the workplace, then you're bringing something natural to the workplace. It makes the men feel at home. It also makes the women feel at home. Now, each of these two have their own. There is a belief that women are better organizers and women have a lot of commitment to what they decide to do. If a woman decides to do something, they will go all the way until they achieve it. And then the men are good risk takers. And in finance, we say the higher the risk, then the higher the return. So if you have a blend of high risk takers, then you are sure you'll get the return. The bottom line will be good. And if you have those that are committed, you have the woman that cares about everybody else, because by nature you care about others. You care about your family, you care about your children, you care about anything else in society. So if you have that kind of environment at a workplace, then it feels natural and it is obvious that you will get good results. What have we done at Finance Trust to support women talent? One, we give equal opportunity at the point of recruitment, at the point of promotion, to both the women and the men. But in our very mission, we provide affordable financial services to low and medium income people, especially women. So we already have that especially women in our mission, and we give it focus. So if we identify a woman who has the talent, then why not? We give them an opportunity. We give special special privileges to women. If a woman needs to go for maternity leave, if they need some time off to go and see their doctor because of the biological structure of a woman, then we allow that. We have health insurance that takes care of the mother, so a woman does not have to worry so much. I have become pregnant, or do I have to do? We have a health insurance scheme that covers the staff. If somebody requires special attention as a woman, I have seen a number of instances where they have been given an opportunity. If they need special medical attention, say for 2 or 3 months, and they can't be at office, they are given a chance to go and sort themselves out and then come back. However, that does not mean that you don't perform. Productivity is very high on the agenda, and every woman needs to give their best. So that when it comes to your turn and you need to get the best out of the finance trust bank, then it's a win-win. We have a skills development program for potential women leaders. I'm a testimony myself. I have gone through the WWB leadership programs. And also internally, we have come up with a mentorship program. We have senior managers and those who have gone through the women leaders program, mentoring others. I personally have 2 mentees, and one of them is a woman. So that has helped us to promote women in our organization. We have strong partnerships with other organizations that believe that women have a special contribution that they can make to society. WWB is one of them, and we have a number of women organizations in Uganda, my country, that we work with. We have special products and services for the women. We have a product called Mama Safe, Mama Safe loan product, and Mama Safe savings product. This is a special product for the women, and this is for our customers. If somebody opens up a Mama Safe savings product, they can take, they automatically qualify to take insurance at a subsidized rate that has been negotiated with the health insurance. So those are some of the things that we have done to support women, both internally as staff and our customers.
Thank you, Ruth. Those are all wonderful examples. And the alignment between your mission for serving women and your support of women internally is also really great to hear about. Janet, as an HR manager, I'd also love to hear your perspective about what institutions can do to support talent all around, but in particular support women leaders.
You can kill me. I'm just kidding. I'm not supposed to say this.
We're all about diversity.
Well, what we do is, in addition to the things Ruth mentioned, we have recognition programs. And we have one of the most important things that you just mentioned is, in addition to unbiased hiring and unbiased promotion, you can do unbiased hiring at the beginning. This is controlled by, let's say, HR, and I'm an HR manager and I'm female. It's okay. But once they go into the ranks, I'm not there anymore. So what you really need to do is provide them better coaching and understanding to your male colleagues and even female colleagues in other parts of the company to understand the importance of diversity and women. Because sometimes it's the last ceiling is not in the hiring process, it's in the promotion and, you know, the other life of the employee. So basically promoting the idea of having women as leaders, as colleagues, as, you know, having a woman on board is not only good because of diversity, you have
better understanding of women through, for example, female clients. You have women sometimes act as sounding boards because they're different from men. They think differently. We tend to argue if we don't have something because they're very clever. And what's important is that women have, let me call it, emotional intuition. So they're not emotional, like they can take decisions based on logic, but they do have emotional intuition. So even if they take a decision, they're more prone to taking all sides in before, you know, coming just. They are risk takers, but their risks are not calculated. This is not to underestimate what male colleagues do, but I'm just saying what the business case for having women on board means. The most important part, I think, is also, in addition to teaching everybody what diversity really means, is having the women leaders all around really prove the case. Like, you can never stop talking about how important it is to be diverse. Sometimes I talk to other women managers, and when you ask them, who are you hiring? And they say, we prefer a man because a man won't get pregnant. So I think we also have something to convey to others, and that is through our actions, our words, and our own commitment. I think basically that's what I want to say, but I'll leave to her to explain more.
Thank you, Janet. And Huda, you also talked about the importance of institutional support in achieving your personal leadership goals. Could you speak a little bit more about institutional support for diversity and what that means?
Of course. I think it's a culture as well. I think and there's, you can, institutions build the culture of promoting diversity and making sure that on all levels diversity is there. In addition of just looking at the numbers of women in the staff, I think, like, I know we look at women in, at all levels to make sure that women are represented in all different types of work and in all levels in the institution. I think that is very important, making sure that senior management is has a good percentage of women, because I think in addition to like mentoring programs and coaching programs, it helps have that environment all through the organization. So one of the things we focus on is really giving an opportunity for women to discuss their issues or any challenges that they have with other women. So creating mentoring and coaching opportunities. We also focus as well on providing flexibility for those who need it. And, you know, because one of the concerns that many people actually always tell you about, like, oh, we hire a woman and then they have a baby and go on maternity leave, and then they have to take care of their kids, and you and constantly you have to remind people that there is that, but there is also like lots of benefits to having diversity. So it's the culture allowing the flexibility for women to be able to actually still do their jobs and maintain a work-life balance to make them stay. And and we also look at the, you know, who's leaving and why they're leaving. So just to make sure that there are no issues coming up there, whether it's a team or a branch or anything like that. Because really, I think it's one of those things that you have to keep an eye on the board. And you have to make sure that it is enforced and reinforced and iterated and remind everyone about it. But, and also, of course, trainings for everyone on diversity and the importance of that, and how to cultivate a culture where everybody feels comfortable, for, especially women, is really important. And I go back to coaching. I think they were fortunate to have an environment where people encourage each other to be able to excel at what they do.
Okay, thank you. Yes, and it's so important, Huda, to track attrition by gender and also conduct those exit interviews to understand what are the factors that maybe leading women to leave an organization, factors that may be leading men to leave that organization. Because we do hear very frequently with organizations that women leave to take care of family matters. But we know that men leave too, and often they leave at similar rates. Sometimes men leave at a higher rate, but there can be a perception that women are leaving more. So it's very important to have that data. So it's great that Al-Majmua is tracking that kind of information. Just to summarize a little bit what you have talked about, Ruth mentioned that organizations to be successful really need both female and male values. We need risk taking and we need commitment. And women and men bring different elements to the table, and that's how we achieve great performance and good decisions. You talked about giving equal opportunity to equally talented people and the importance of stating openly what the vision for diversity is. Having the support of women in the mission can be very important in aligning the staff and the management around the idea of achieving diversity. You talked about putting in place high potential development programs for men and women with a focus on what women need to succeed. The importance of mentorship and constant communication, creating that culture of understanding around the importance of gender diversity. Of course, there's the issue of bias, eliminating bias, not only in hiring, but in those promotion decisions where perhaps Janet, head of HR, is not always involved, and making sure that that's a cultural issue. I think we've received some questions from the audience, so I'd like to take a few moments to ask those to our panelists. We have a few minutes left in our webinar. Allegra is kindly passing me some of the questions. There's a question for Huda. What are some feedback strategies that have been useful for you? Does she encourage people she manages to give feedback?
We institutionally, we do regular feedbacks, which is twice a year, annual and mid-year. And those, I think, are so essential that, you know, one of the things that are important is never to skip these, really, and just, you know, we have a good time to give feedback and receive feedback. And what I try to do is have two separate sessions, one feedback from the team to me. Because I find it more useful to have the two sessions separately, and a session where I give my feedback. So I think that is institutionalized. But other than that, I think just creating the time to chat with people. I think the informal discussions that people have tend to really, sometimes they are more informative than anything else. And taking the time spent with your team, just to chat, people like to chat. And you hear a lot that way, actually, in terms of what's bothering them, what's not bothering them, even if it comes in, maybe sometimes indirect, but you hear it with regular chats. And I find I now spend more time chatting with them informally after the program, because I think that has helped a lot in listening to what they need or what's bothering them, or if there's anything that you would like to say, actually.
Thank you. We have another question. Someone in the audience has asked, what is the MBEI tool that all of you mentioned? And I can say a few words about that, and if you'd like to add anything. The MBTI refers to the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator. It's one of the most widely used personality inventory tools in the world. It's used globally, and it's a very well-researched tool. The purpose of the tool is really to help individuals understand diversity and function optimally in diverse environments. Ruth, you talked a lot about the impact of the MBTI on you personally. Would you like to add anything?
You have said what the MBTI actually is. What I can add to the MBTI is that it's not only a tool. It is a methodology that helps an individual realize who they are. It brings out the personality of anybody clearly, what your preferences are. And those preferences actually give a clear explanation of why somebody behaves and reacts the way they are. So it is a real life tool. I would encourage everybody to try it on themselves and get a realization of who actually they are.
Great, thank you, Ruth. And we've been implementing the MBI tool, MBTI tool here internally at Women's World Banking. We found it extremely useful as well. We have a few other questions. Janet, what is one piece of advice you would offer to a young woman today?
Realizing that change is not something you get once. It's incremental, it's slow, it's challenging. So that does not mean that you give up or that you're not really getting there. Just give yourself the time and give yourself the time to analyze yourself. Like, it helps you to ground yourself. This is what all my colleagues today have been talking about. Take the time to know yourself, time for yourself. And just realize that and keep in mind that this is incremental. It's an ongoing process. Now we still have so much to learn and so much to develop. So we are still not there. None of us is. So don't worry if you see yourself challenged by any situation. Just know that you have time to go over it and go through it. And always seek the support of colleagues. It's amazing. Friends, community.
Thank you. And one final question. We just have about 2 minutes left in our conversation. The question is, how have you empowered other people in your institution? If you each just say one sentence or two about how you've empowered others, starting with Huda.
I think somebody was talking about that we do have a leadership talk, and somebody said, you know, leadership is really by example, and it's true. I think the more you act and you listen to people and you act like a leader and get the feedback and appreciate, and the more this you see that happening around you. So the way you actually deal with people, they give you back the same way you treat them. So I think that's the one thing that I think is that gives an impact everywhere.
Thank you for that. And Ruth, one way that you've empowered others?
One way to empower others is to support them in their passion. What do they want to achieve? Because people support things that will work for them and what they will benefit from them. And if anybody knows that you're supporting them for their own good, then they will always open up, they will be transparent, they will trust you, and you can talk about a number of other things. And through that continued interaction, we can do a lot more than in a training school kind of.
Thank you. And finally to you, Janet.
I think it's listening more than you talk, recognition, support, and trying to understand the other, whether it's using MBTI or any other tool that you find useful. Know that you're not everybody's like you, and not everyone will mirror you. So this perspective, that would be helpful.
Great. Well, I'd like to thank all of our wonderful alumni for sharing your experiences with us today. I'm certain that you've inspired many of the people listening to us today, and we're very grateful for your openness and your willingness to share. Of course, we'd also like to thank everyone who joined us today and became part of Women's World Banking Celebration of International Women's Day. If you have any questions for our panelists, you can contact them via email, and their addresses will be up on the screen in a moment. You can also visit our website if you'd like to learn more about the work that Women's World Banking does, www.womensworldbanking.org, or email us at communications@womensworldbanking.org. We'll be sending a recording of this roundtable, the panelist contact information, as well as a link to our program to your email, so please be on the lookout. And thanks once again. Have a great rest of your day or night, as it goes for our panelists in another part of the world. And happy International Women's Day.
Thank you.
Thank you.